Okay, the last presenter is actually myself. I'm an associate professor of movement sciences in the University of Idaho, Moscow, Idaho, and I have an adjunct position in a bi-regional planning program. So on behalf of my co-authors and myself, my talk today is Factors Influencing the Active Commuting Behaviors of the U.S. Department of Interior Employees. Unfortunately, I also have nothing to disclose. I can only hope someday. So the rationale for the study was in October 2009, President Obama signed an executive order that requested that all federal agencies do some sort of a greenhouse gas analysis. There are certain parts of federal agencies that they have a good handle on what their greenhouse gas emissions are, but the one limitation they have is as far as of whether and how their employees commute to work or not. The other part of the report, the executive order, was that federal agencies identify means to which to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, particularly choosing mass transit options and so forth. So to get an idea of working with these commuting modes of their employees, they work with the University of Idaho Park Studies Unit to develop an internet-based questionnaire. Our interest also was not just understanding greenhouse gas emissions, but understanding those individuals in the Department of Interior who pick active transportation modes and figuring out ways that perhaps you can incentivize individuals to choose active transportation modes, both from the greenhouse gas emissions perspective and from understanding promoting physical activity. But we felt like before you can work on incentivizing these things, we want to understand what the characteristics were of those people who choose active transportation. So the way the process worked is we had email addresses of all 52,963 permanent full-time employees of the Department of the Interior. Approximately 20% of the workforce for the Department of the Interior are seasonal employees, so they were not surveyed. 2 and 3 weeks after the survey was administered, reminder emails were sent to all the non-respondents. Of those that were sent out, a little under 3,000 of those emails bounced back for some sort of user unknown error, so they were excluded. So of the remaining 50,000 employee addresses, we got a little over 50% of those responses back from the Department of Interior employees. So the way the survey worked was they were able to get the respondents to tell how these people get to work in the week prior to administering the survey. And they were allowed to choose three different methods or legs in this case. So, for instance, some folks, the majority of them just drove straight to work, but they were allowed to, say, drive to an area, carpool with the second leg, and then walk on a third leg, or some combinations of all of those things. So the commuting categories they chose, again, we broke them down between what we called non-active and active modes. So some folks drove car, SUV. We also surveyed people who took mass transit options, such as commuter rail and a ferry in certain areas. And then we found the individuals who solely walked or biked. However, when we got the responses back, as you can imagine, doing surveys in people, we got a really high variety of different type of responses that people could give. So what we basically looked at was all the individuals who chose a non-active commuting mode for all days, for all legs, we called those non-active commuters. Of the respondents that reported walking at least one leg of one day or one method of one day, we called those walkers. Same for biking. Any person who reported biking on any leg on any of those days was called a biker. But then we had another category which we called as a mixed mode. And mixed mode meant a lot of different things. The majority of those folks were who probably took mass transit for one leg and then walked or biked another segment. So they weren't truly walkers or bikers, so we put them in that category. And we did have some number of individuals who reported walking and biking within the same mode. So therefore, they didn't fit into those mutually exclusive categories of biker or walker. So we called them sort of mixed mode because they took a combination of modes. So we want to try and figure out what our predictors we thought would be of active transportation. And so we've sort of picked the four major ones a priori that we thought would be important. So the first one was distance. In this case, we chose distance, which was a continuous variable between where they worked and their home. We also thought age would be important, so they surveyed 11 different age categories as a discrete variable, and to bring some of those sample sizes up, some of those categories, we collapsed it to those five categories. We also thought the workplace location would be important, particularly with the Department of the Interior that has urban locations and then some very, very rural locations also. So in order to get an assessment of workplace, we defined them as metro and non-metro. So what we did with those respondents was take the reported zip code of where their workplace was, connect it to the USDA urban-rural continuum, and codes 1 through 3, we defined those as metro, and modes 4 through 6, we called those non-metro. We also thought sex would be important, so we took whether or not they're male or female. So in order to assess these predictors of active transportation modes, which obviously is a combination of discrete and continuous variables, we used the PROC logistic procedure and SAS and did logistic regression. And those of you that work with logistic regression, the way it works is you have to pick one category as a reference group for each of these analyses. So as we'll see next, the non-active commuters were the overwhelming majority of folks. So therefore, the non-active commuters were the reference group compared to the active groups in each of these analyses. So looking at our overall response rate back, we started off with a little over 25,000, but a little over 2,000 respondents reported not commuting in the week that they figured out the survey. So some of them could have been telecommuters in certain areas, or some of them just did not respond to the distance category. So we removed them from the analysis. Then we found a number of responses that were probably not plausible, like the person who lived 200 miles between home and work and reported walking. That would have been rather impressive. So we struggled to figure out whether or not there's a good statistical way of excluding outliers. And unfortunately, when you're doing four levels of a predictor variable logistic regression, you're limited in the options that you have. There's also not a good, maybe perhaps you could fill us in a little bit better. It's not a good categories that I can see as far as what is plausible for walking or biking for different categories. So sort of a pragmatic cutoff didn't work out very well. So we took the PROC univariate procedure. We identified the upper fifth quantile of each of those groups, so just the extreme outliers, and we removed them from the analysis. So we were left with a sample size of a little over 21,000 respondents. And as you can see, before we get into the other results, only about 11% of the respondents reported actively commuting to work. Kind of a busy slide, but I thought it would give you sort of a description of the sample. Again, the non-active commuters lived a little over 15 miles between home and work. The mixed mode was similar, about 13 miles. The walkers were about 0.7 miles from work, and bikers were a little over 4. The majority of our age category was those in the 51 to 60 years range, and they were used, again, as our predictor variable in that analysis. Majority of the sample were men and individuals who lived in metro work environments. So we had a pretty good range of those different variables and also as a function of age. So looking at our logistic regression model, you can see that all four of our predictors that we thought would be important all were important predictors, very significant. So next, when you start looking at each of those individual categories, looking at distance to work, you can see with mixed modes, walking and biking, all of them had a negative estimate or a negative slope, meaning that those individuals who had a greater distance between home and work were less likely to choose active commuting modes. I would like to note that the mixed mode had an odds ratio of 0.98, although statistically significant, and the odds ratio does not overlap with 1. It's probably not a very meaningful comparison. Versus the odds ratios for walking a 0.17 means that distance is a very strong disincentive for those folks who choose to walk to work. And bike less so, but it was also statistically significant. Looking at age, again, the age category, what we did here, non-active commuters were a reference group. We took the 51 to 60 years of age reference group because they were the highest sample size. So comparing each of those categories back to the reference group in the mixed modes, you can see there was no effective age in each of those categories versus the reference group. For walking and biking, the little daggers there were the comparisons to help you identify those that were statistically significant. What you can see is those in the 31 to 40 years of age range were more likely to walk or bike versus those in the 51 to 60 years of age category. The only other category that was statistically significant was those individuals 61 years of age and older. And as you can see, they were less likely to bike to work versus their reference group. The effect of sex, you can see here that in all three modes, there's a negative slope or a negative estimate. Men were the reference group in this case because of men being the highest sample size. And what you can see here is that across all three modes, women were less likely to choose an active transportation mode when compared to men. Again, factoring in all the other variables, particularly biking, as you can see, it had an odds ratio of 0.28. Looking at metro versus non-metro workplace, again, by nature, the fact that the largest sample size was attributed to metro, the non-metro, you can see a negative slope, meaning that working in a non-metropolitan location was a disincentive to choose an active transportation modes. And again, in this case, the lowest odds ratio was our mixed mode. So the access to mixed modes in the non-metropolitan location was probably a limiting factor. So in conclusion, if you would like to take these results and apply them to a large organization, whether it be a federal agency or other, we would like to think that there are a few lessons that can be learned from understanding the characteristics of our population. The first one is that employees that live greater distances between home and work are less likely to choose active transportation modes. Although I would have the caveat with the mixed mode being an odds ratio of 0.98, I think you could be a little bit safer in saying that perhaps mixed mode is a bit less limiting factor for distance. As far as age compared to the reference group, 31 to 40-year-olds are likely or more likely to choose an active transportation mode for walking or biking. However, those that are 61 years of age or older are less likely to bike to work when compared to the reference group. Overall, women are less likely to choose active commuting modes compared to men. And finally, employees that work in non-metropolitan areas are less likely to choose active transportation modes versus active categories in metro locations. Questions? Absolutely. We don't have that information specifically what their job responsibility is. We have an idea of what agency they worked for, and we know the metro versus non-metro, but not their specific job. Yes. Well, in the mixed mode, in order for it to fit in that category, they had to have done active transportation for part of it. Yeah. People who walked and biked the same leg?
So, by definition, those in mixed, are they always public transit users?
Not necessarily, no. We could pull those data out. We didn't do that because it's one of those things where we wanted to do logistic regression because we were afraid of conflicts between age and location and some of these other different types of things. So we wanted to keep our sample size as large as possible. So that's why we really didn't partition out all those different parts of it, because we're afraid you're really sort of reducing the cell size in some of the comparisons. So it's a good question, though. No one was counted twice.
Right, so on that one slide, it wasn't really clear. So anyone who biked, walked any segment with a walker, anyone who biked any segment with a biker. But then mixed was people who walked or biked one segment plus something else.
Yes.
No, yeah, I'm
trying to remember the first ones. So the second one, basically, those who walked or biked, that was the only mode they chose. And so, therefore, they fit into that mutually exclusive category. And you're absolutely right that if they did some sort of combination of public transit with walking, they won't necessarily fit in any of those mutually exclusive categories. So that's where our mixed mode kind of became sort of a catch-all for folks who had different combinations of those modes. And what was your first one again, sorry?
Transport, including public transportation. That a lot of other studies and models include public transportation as active transport, not as private.
Because you cannot use active transportation without at least walking to or from the station. So, and the data that shows that people who use public transportation are walking twice as much as the average American. So that is partially why they're included with the active transportation. So that was interesting when you had them in the non-active with car drivers.
Well, what it would have to be is, we didn't do this analysis, but they had to report the distance of that given commute for each of those three legs. And so part of it would depend on whether they reported what the segment length of that active transportation mode was. We just didn't break them down by the individual length of those segments. So it would have to be, it depends on what rationale you would pick, or what's a minimum distance that should count from walking to an active transportation mode, I guess. So I'd have to take a little closer look at that. So. It was a longer one for a mixed mode.
Yeah.
Now, going back to the active transportation modes, there was a question on there that reported how far they lived from that active transportation hub, wherever that distance was. We just didn't look at that analysis. So. The survey was actually repeated a few years later, but we haven't looked at that data yet.
The comment is, I'm a federal employee, so
yeah.
Just from a data perspective, this type of survey is being done every year. I think by every agency per the DEQ requirements, the council requirements, all of it.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting, the data that now federal agencies are able to obtain. So just, within local, just like big employers,
I mean, one of the things that one of the reasons why we didn't pool it is because obviously there's a very high likelihood that a lot of people responded it twice. So if it was the same person on different, because you can't mutually link those identifiers, I didn't want to throw them into one big pool of data, because it'd be essentially certain people reporting themselves twice. And so those are some of those sort of things we've struggled with, but we actually do have the data for the Department of the Interior. We just haven't done this type of analysis with it for the second year.
On the turnaround commute, are there some department employees that spend a couple of days on site?
Yep.
Counted as?
Yeah, well, there was one person that was 700 miles, and what happened was, is I think they lived on the Pacific coast, and then looks like they drove or flew into one of the major cities and stayed over for the week and then went back on weekends. And so, but the problem is that that's the one person who filled in the qualitative piece explaining what their commute was. But there were some people with these really extreme commuters that didn't provide us with any additional information as to why they did that. Or we'd have no idea whether it's a one-time thing that person chose that commute, or whether they do it regularly. So that's where we just kind of said, if you look at the plots, were just all over. The medians and the means were really skewed. So we just said top 5%, even though some of them might have been possible. It's one of those, in how often in science do you do not want to see something statistically significant? I mean, when you looked at the odds ratios, it was very, but it was must have been driven by the large sample size of the non-active commuters. So that's one of those comparisons where, at least for distance, even though it's statistically significant, I wouldn't say the mixed mode is a disincentive. The way that we look at incentivizing is perhaps locating, providing some sort of a workplace, incentivizing them to live closer to transportation hubs, that type of thing. So.
In your review of literature, have you come across any visionary private businesses that have like purposely made fewer parking spots than they have employees, things like that?
I know that there are certain places that that do disincentives for a way of doing that, but I don't know of any large organizations who have tried something like that. So anyway, we'd be more than happy to talk with all your presenters. We're out of time, so thank you for coming. So.